All right. Hello, Morro Bay, and welcome to the February 16th episode of Public Works Advisory Board. Please note that four members are present, and Bill Olson wasn't able to attend. As we keep moving along, we have a quorum, and then we're going to have a moment of silence. Okay, moving on. We have one. A moment of silence. Yeah. And we have one letter that we've received from the Citizens Bike Committee talking about. This is from Mr. Robert Davis talking about the draft of the Morro Bay Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan. So please note that we have that. Does anybody else have any other correspondence that you'd like to talk about? Richard, did you want to bring up that email you got? Or would anybody show interest in that? Ron?
I move that Ron for vice chair.
And I second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. And Ron Burkhart will be vice chair for that. All right. Thanks a lot. All right, we're moving on. We have the consent calendar. I'll just go through it. We don't need to, although we can stop at anything. So A1 is the approval of minutes of October 20th and November 1st. The recommendation is to approve minutes. Does anybody see anything in those minutes they'd like to amend, or we go on to approve?
All right. I second it.
And then let's go to director's report for this month. Is there anything anybody, Rob, I know, is chomping at the bit and likes to be on the hot seat to talk about the director's report? We'll stop down here, start down here with you, Stephen.
Oh, okay. And basically, it's for my own information, Rob, and it's under the collection system portion. And I noticed you let out to bid the lift station number 2 to Whitaker Construction. And just, I guess, because I deal with this on a regular basis, I was quite surprised by the amount of money for that contract. And I guess the question I have is, I'm not sure the size of that lift station. I know you were going from a wet well, dry well system to a submersible wet well system only. Is that correct?
That's correct.
With duplex pumps?
Correct.
What is the pump sizes in this thing? What's rated?
I should know that,
It just seemed high to me, yeah. But I haven't dealt with it. It may be very large.
There's a significant dewatering effort that's going to be involved with that pump station. We encountered groundwater in our soil borings at about 12 feet below surface. This wet well is going down to 30 feet below surface, so the plan is the contractor is going to drill soldier piles and install lagging.
Oh, okay. So there is a lot of foundation work and other things going on.
Yes, and there's a building being constructed with a couple of restrooms that will be part of that building that will eventually probably, once it's in operation, become public restrooms. So
fair enough. It just caught my eye when I was going through the directory.
Yes, wet well or lift stations aren't inexpensive work.
No. I assume lift station 3 is a much smaller affair.
Lift station 3 is a smaller lift station, and we're very close to that project also going out to bid. That one kind of waiting for groundwater to drop a little bit there, and because that is also close to the water, and I'm trying not to have such a dewatering effort on that.
Is that going to be at the same depth as number 2?
No. That's I signed these plans.
That's totally fine, Ron. You got a lot. You have a lot on your plate. That's enough. I'm sorry.
No problem. Thank you.
Did you have anything else?
No, that covered it.
Ron, did you have anything in the director's report you'd like to ask about, Ron, Rob about?
On your e-request for road repair, did you ever get that moved forward to make it easier for citizens to be able to find it and make requests for pothole repairs on the streets?
It's on the front page now, so you don't have to dig tunnel.
Okay, this makes it sound like you still have to dig through to find it.
Oh, yeah, I should have changed that. I'm sorry. No, you don't have to tunnel through the website to get there. We're also going to be making some improvements to that e-request so that right now you make that e-request and it sort of disappears into the ether, and you have no idea whether it actually went anywhere, or there's going to be the ability for you to put your email address in there so you get a response back. Mm-hmm. We'll have the ability to track those much better, because I feel the same way when I do the work order requests, that kind of wondering whether it's until I see it actually getting done. I don't know that it actually really went over to our maintenance section. I believe that it does, but sometimes I'm not sure. As,
okay. Now, there was another problem with getting the phone number or the date where it had to be without dashes or something, and that really made it difficult to do, too. And I don't know if that was just the way your system set up, but I don't remember exactly. But when I went and tried to do it, it didn't.
Yeah.
I had to do it about 6 times.
I think I've been retrained by the system, so I always put the numbers in that way.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you if that's been changed. We will be making some major enhancements to that e-request, and it'll have subject categories, more discrete subject categories for stormwater, for sewer. Kind of everybody took a step up when Peter Douglas retired and Dr. Charles Lester took the director spot. Everybody in the Santa Cruz office kind of got to take a step up that way. So they've assigned a new planner for our wastewater plant, and they anticipate a hearing in May or June instead of April for that wastewater treatment plant.
Okay, second question I have is, I know before we had a deadline of 2014. Will this, what it says here, mean that the deadline will be moved up?
The deadline is kind of put on hold while we're working on things that are outside of our control. An appeal to the Coastal Commission is outside of our control, so... We're keeping the regional board advised on where we're at, the status of our project, so they know everything that our JPA board knows when we go there.
Thank you.
Okay, looks like it's my turn. The first item on the first page is number one. Janine, would you like to announce or talk about the cleanup week, or do you want me to just announce it?
Sure, I can say a few quick words. Next meeting will be after this, spring cleanup week has been scheduled for the week of April 2nd through the 6th. It happens twice a year, once in the fall and once in the spring. And this is where you can put up to 2 cubic yards, or the equivalent of 12 32-gallon trash containers of material at the curb for no extra charge for the garbage company to come for collection. In addition to your regular gray waste wheeler for that day. If you bundle stuff up, the bundles will be taken away. If you have a cardboard box, that will get taken away. If you have a metal or a plastic container, trash container, that will not be taken away. There's also, at this time, a discounted fee for bulky item collection. And for the bulky item collection, you do need to contact the garbage company by the Friday prior to the cleanup week, because there's a different vehicle that comes out for pickup of those items. So for anyone who has questions or needs more information about the cleanup week, they can contact the garbage service at 543-0875.
All right, perfect. And also, folks,
excuse me.
Yes,
oh,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just want to add that follows the the citywide garage sale, yard sale that Morro Bay Beautiful sponsors. So over the weekend, there will be a citywide garage sale. You don't have the contact information, but it's Morro Bay Beautiful for information on that. And there are maps and contact Morro Bay Beautiful to get your garage sale on the map, and I think there's a small fee involved for that, but it's a great event to acquire and get rid of your treasures.
That's a great way of putting it, and it is, and you have to be careful walking the streets because people are anxious to get their new acquisitions. Also, I'd like to announce to everybody out there in Morro Bay, not only will we have the garage sale weekend, and then we'll have the trash pickup, but keep in mind when you bundle your stuff or you call to have these things taken away about recycling large items and maybe breaking up what you're doing. Because a lot of times they just will trash a lot of things, and if you have stuff that's recyclable, that's something to keep in mind. Going back to the director's report. Rob, I had a question looking at the fire station talking. I know Dylan, this is Dylan's item, but one thing it's talking about the project is well underway, the admin living quarters. Do you have a date of completion?
No, I don't. I would expect somewhere late summer, fall, based on my view of the progress of the project.
Well, I know just driving by it, it's
come out of the ground.
Last few months, it's like it's starting to happen, and I know people are going to start asking about it. Okay, and now I'm on page 2 of 4 underwater. Rob, could you give us an explanation of what mandatory water conservation means now, given what our water situation and what sort of water conservation the city wants people to do?
We're under the moderately restricted water conservation program, which is outlined in our municipal code on the requirements, but basically it's be sensible about your water use. Try not to wash your car without using a shutoff on, spring-loaded shutoff on the hose. Sweep sidewalks, hard surfaces instead of hosing them down. There's no mandatory we received about a half an hour notice that the state water was being shut off, so we scrambled our crews together and got the desal fired back up again. Luckily, Morro Bay contains about 3 days worth of storage in our water tank, so it wasn't the crisis. There was no threat of taps running dry at that time. But this electrical upgrade, what it'll allow us to do is allow us to run both the brackish water and salt water trains at the same time. We can only run one pumping system at a time because of the electrical capacity of the line coming from PG&E, and the switchgear was sized for the saltwater treatment system. When we added the brackish water, this was the second phase in the process, was to upgrade that electrical. It's funded through a grant from the State Department of Water Resources, so that will be, of course, we will have to, take before we plug something new in, we're going to have to shut off the power to it and make that switch over as quickly as possible.
I don't want to belabor it. It cost the city, was it $50,000 to start up the desal plant? So we started up, and then we pay that money, and we only have it on for 3 weeks of the year. So when we had that emergency, do we have to pay that next large sum, or how does that work?
Well, it's most of the money that we spend for when we run the desal is for a lot of sampling that we need to do. And so we'll continue to run it for a while after we've started it up, just to take advantage of that water quality sampling that we will need to do. I'm not sure the number is $50,000, but it's nothing. We don't pay a fee to do it. It's just the actual costs of running the plant, and a lot of those costs are water quality sampling that we don't normally have to do if we're not running the plant. So we
incur those costs if we're operating it for a set period of time because we have to sample. But in
we have
an emergency,
to sample.
We don't necessarily.
We
have
do,
to do
still
that.
Have to sample,
but not to the degree of the longer.
We still have to sample for that same degree. Because that water is being delivered to our water customers, and we need to ensure that we're delivering a safe water supply.
And you're only running the brackish now. You haven't really used the salt system.
Not since the 90s, I believe, was the last time they ran the salt water system.
Okay. And then, let me just go to page 3 of 4. This is this. I'm sorry. Stephen already asked that. Could we go to number 4, please? I've been noticing around town that there's been some sidewalk maintenance going on around town, specifically people grinding out mismatched concrete slabs. Is that from the city, or is that other business owners doing that?
That's the city. We have an inspection program, and then we prioritize the repairs that need to be done. So if it's up to about, in our policy, it's an inch. If it's an inch or less, we'll grind that. And we've been using this process where instead of the conventional kind of angle grinder or vibratory grinder that has been used in the past, this company that we've had a relationship with for the past couple years is using a saw cutting method. So they'll cut they determine what the angle of the cut needs to be less than 8.33%, that magic number for ADA access, and they'll line out that cut so they can cut a sliver off of the off the concrete. You end up with a nicer finished product that way. It doesn't look like it's been pulverized concrete, and it's less noisy and much less expensive than more traditional methods. They operate pretty efficiently now with that angle cutter. It's a diamond blade dry concrete saw that they're using that has a HEPA vacuum attached to it to keep the dust down.
Now, is that just part of regular streets and road sidewalk maintenance money?
That's or just something part else? Of regular streets and sidewalk.
And about how much does it cost? And you don't have to be exact either.
That's a number that is sitting on my desk that I have no idea what that is.
Well, I was just curious because I saw them. They were doing it over on the other side of town near Lolo's, and I saw them near the planning offices and city offices. And I'm like, well, this must be some sort of concerted effort. So I was just kind of curious.
I can tell you that we did this 2 years ago, did all the downtown Quintana Porsche inspection and confirm which ones we want.
Now, are these, I'm sorry to belabor this, but are people calling the city, or is this city maintenance going around town? Or
it's a combination of both. It's,
so if you're out there in Morro Bay and you see a sidewalk that you think needs to be ground down, you can bring it to the attention.
Yeah, please use our citizen request tracker online or call our maintenance department to get that your project in that maintenance queue. And that number is 772-6278.
That does all my questions on the director's report. Did anybody else have any?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
I just want to add a couple of things to it. Last night, this is the week of meetings, so we had City Council on Tuesday, Planning Commission on Wednesday, and now PWAB tonight. Last night, the Planning Commission approved the bike plan, so I just want to give you an update on that and recommended forwarding that along to Council. It'll be going on the next Council meeting agenda, so we also did receive a favorable recommendation from our transportation partners at SLOCOG on that bike plan. So we'll be moving that forward once Council approves it too, and looking forward to Caltrans approval on that bike plan.
Good. That's being that our meetings are staggered. Thank you for letting us know. That was the bike plan that we had a few one meeting ago or two meetings ago. Okay, so that does it for the director's report, and we move on. Now, I brought up earlier that, Rob, thank you, I misspoke, and I said the Morro Bay Citizens Bike Committee memo was some sort of correspondence, but it's actually on our consent calendar, and it was brought in. So now that that's been approved and sent to Council, I guess it's a moot point. Moving on to our next item, old business, consideration of Estero Bay Transit proposal. And this is from Janine. We have that in our packet. So, Janine, what would you like? Would you like to explain this, and then we'll open it up to public comment?
Certainly. Thank you. Tonight you have before you consideration of the Estero Bay Transit Service proposal. Back in September, the City Council had directed staff, they concurred with the Public Works Advisory Board recommendation to direct staff to continue working with the Council of Governments and the Regional Transit Authority, or RTA, on the proposal that had been put forward at that time, as there were some deficiencies related to levels of service, and to see whether or not those deficiencies could be remedied and bring something back. So we've had several meetings with SLOCOG and RTA, and what you have before you tonight is a revised proposal from that original one, and it does take care of some of the deficiencies that were noted. Particularly, there's the so high school centric nature of the original proposal and the time schedule, where in the mornings the focus was picking up students in Los Osos, taking them directly to the high school, and then in the afternoon doing the reverse, going from the high school back to Los Osos. So that part has been removed from the fixed route that's being proposed. However, there still are deficiencies that remain with the revised proposal in terms of the south portion of Morro Bay still has less than hourly service, and now that has also expanded to include the beach tract area and the high school area. And what's being proposed is for those areas an every other hour plus two additional trips, one during the middle portion of the day and then one at the end of the day. And those are different than what currently is being provided with the Morro Bay Transit Service of hourly service coverage all day. In addition, for the senior shuttle or the demand response portion, there is a proposal to add additional day, so Friday would be added from the original proposal. So the first 2 days, the Monday and Wednesday, that is for the original current running senior shuttle program from Ride-On, that's only allows for four trips per month, and that's for the North Coast area. And the augmentation would be to add Tuesday, Thursday, and now Friday to those service days. And on those days, it would just be for those individuals who are in Los Osos and Morro Bay, and they would not be limited to a certain number of trips within the month. And there is still the concerns with, or the challenges of having a larger pool of individuals with which you would be competing with for a ride on one vehicle on these days, particularly in light of the South Bay Dial-A-Ride demand response service being no longer in operation as of summer, I think it was August of last year. So there's a much higher, or there's a cost implications. There was an addendum that went out late yesterday, and I do apologize for not having that correct information in the original staff report. The addendum was correcting cost information that's attached in the fiscal impact and in the conclusion section with regard to what the surplus TDA estimated would be for the SLOCOG proposal, as well as the existing transit service. And so the numbers that are listed in the addendum are the actual numbers and should be replaced with the numbers that have been provided in the staff report. With regard to cost, the impact to the transit fund, as you can see in the addendum, under both the SLOCOG proposal and the existing Morro Bay Transit Service, for fiscal year 12-13, there would be a surplus of Transportation Development Act funds. The city's existing service would be higher. What the Council of Governments proposal was looking at was taking our existing service costs of today, which is a higher amount because we will be adjusting the cost allocation plan, the overhead portion of that, for next fiscal year. And as you can see in the table, there's a much lower number listed for cost allocation under both service types. With the slow cog proposal, there's a reduction, but not a complete elimination of overhead due to the fact that there's still going to be some general fund employees who would be doing some transit-related activities based on what the change in service would be from the existing service to the slow cog proposal. Things like maintenance or the transit office or the building facilities portions of the cost allocation are removed because those would no longer be functions that the city would be performing. And so those costs get reduced. But there still would be others in with administration staff time. There would be a reduction from what is currently happening at this point with Morrowbie Transit, as well as what would be changing for next fiscal year under Morrowbie Transit as well. So as you can see in the table, there's about a $7,400 difference between the two. The unintended consequence, though, with the changes to the cost allocation plan is that there will be an impact to the general fund. Because the general fund employees would no longer have these transit-related activities that they're performing that would then be coming and paid out of the transit fund, these get transferred over to the general fund because now there's time freed up, or in the case of some of the reorganization with the public services department and staff, duties have shifted from transit-related activities to general fund-related activities. So there will be about a $67,000, a little over $67,000 hit to the general fund that would occur under the Council of Governments proposal. Under the existing service levels with Morrowbie Transit Service and the changes for next fiscal year, there will be about a $30,000 hit, and this is after discussions with the Administrative Services Director about the cost allocation, the overhead, and what the changes under each would be, and coming up with the dollar figures for that. With regard to the, and so that's where you see a big drop in the Morrowbie Transit costs for next year, and that's not information that the Council of Governments had as far as what specific numbers would be. So they were looking at what our current budget is versus what our budget will be for next year, which takes into account the change, the large change into the cost allocation share. With that, staff's recommendation at this point, because of the hit to the general fund, that there's not $68,000 available as far as it would have to compete with other general fund activities and be a council decision for. But with that hit to the general fund, as well as there not being really a significant, there is a cost savings for or a surplus of TDA funds that would be, but under the existing services provided by Morrowbie Transit, there is a higher surplus of savings. And with the on the service end, there's a lower level of service that's being provided. So staff is recommending that the Public Works Advisory Board review the proposal from the Council of Governments and to recommend to the City Council that it determine that the proposal is not in the best interests of the Morro Bay residents and to not pursue implementation of it. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to the board for questions, comments, and public comment.
If I could, real quick, Janine, I noticed in one area you spoke about there was increase.
For several, probably a year and a half on this issue. And, you know, SLOCOG's role here is really a coordinator, facilitator, and a distributor of funding. And, you know, I've been challenged by my board to make transit more efficient, you know, region-wide, and we're doing this in North County and South County. And but ultimately, one of our roles here is also as a regulator, because we're required by law to monitor the transit systems and ensure efficiency. And essentially, we view this system as unsustainable. It's financially unsustainable, and it's headed towards financial penalties based on its performance. But we are pleased with a lot of the progress that we've made in the last year, because last time I was here, it was for the first time we found out the true overhead cost of being $109,000 last year, and the overhead this year is also going to be $109,000 which puts it at about a 44% overhead on the system. And but we are pleased that the current cost proposal that just came out yesterday, you know, brings that overhead down to, you know, $59,000. And also some of the other service improvements that Morro Bay staff has performed in the last couple of months. I think that was at the beginning of the fiscal year this started, was changing the schedule so that the Morro Bay met at the park and the RTA pulse times, and then also extending the hours in the PM to get some additional ridership. But unfortunately, looking at the numbers, these improvements aren't enough. And our requirements that we're asked to enforce are that every system has a minimum 10% fare box recovery ratio, so that every $100 that you spend, you have to receive $10 back in the kitty in the fare box at the end of the day. Your system is now operating at 4%. And so essentially you would either have to double your fares or you'd have to double your ridership. Currently, your first quarter statistics for this year, you're on about the same pace. Looks like you're coming in a little bit. You may come in a little bit higher at about 5%. Unfortunately, failing systems are ineligible for state transit assistance funds. Last year, you received $49,000 in state transit assistance funds. This year, you're going to receive $15,000 in state transit assistance funds. And additionally, if the city doesn't make reasonable efforts to make these productivity improvements, the law basically says that SLOCOG shall not approve any increase in TDA over the existing amount. We're looking at up to probably a 10% increase in TDA coming to the local jurisdictions. And what our proposal tries to do is leverage the existing resources that you already pay to the Regional Transit Authority for their transit staff, and leverage those resources in order to provide local transit services. So we can debate some of the merits of the service plan, and RTA staff is here, and they will probably speak, and then my transit staff is here. Elian Wilson is also here. I wanted to point out that on page one, and also I suppose this is on the revised page two, says that the SLOCOG proposal was for $41,000 in the cost allocation plan, and actually our view at the cost allocation plan is that your staff time would be minimal, because essentially RTA staff would be a turnkey operation where RTA staff is providing the driver, the fuel, the maintenance, the training, the marketing, the planning, and coming to your board and to your city council in order to provide that support. But we did offer a 7% overhead, and it could be higher. It could be 10% that would be available for Morro Bay city staff for their review and agenda prep and coordination and attendance at meetings. I wanted to point out that on page three at the top, we're unclear on the reference to the 21% fare box, because all the in our view, we're looking at a 4% fare box recovery ratio. On page five, there is some discussion about the augmented demand response being one additional day. I guess I didn't get that, Janine, that's the difference between our prior proposal to our existing proposal. So essentially we're saying 5 days a week there would be demand responsive services in Morro Bay. And I wanted to point out that, and there was a comment by Board Member Shively on the 65 and over condition, and essentially this is a service plan that's being tailored, and Morro Bay will be paying in conjunction with the county. And then finally, we're getting close to the end here, on the table comparison. Is really not an apples-to-apples comparison because of the change. I mean, we're trying to compare numbers here.
Are you referring to the cost-benefit table? That's the table
you're
referring to.
Yes, okay. Yeah. Because the Morro Bay existing service doesn't include the senior service that's operated. And then in the existing Morro Bay Transit Service, there's an estimated fare, I don't know what future year this is assumed, of $19,000. And we don't understand what the mechanism is or how we got to $19,000 in fare revenue when we're looking at $12,000 in the existing system in fare revenue. And that's really what we're trying to get at, is to get this additional revenue. So there is some discussion on runabout, but essentially, for the most part, all the runabout changes are moot. It's irrespective of whichever transit service proposal you go with. The runabout issues are the same with ADA. I know this is a very difficult decision, and there are trade-offs here. There's service trade-offs. But inherently, we just think that this system, the way it's developed, is inefficient. The way it's operated, where the driver essentially has to kill time at certain stops, if there's no caller ride, you know, the vehicle has to sit there and wait for 10 minutes when it could be providing service somewhere else. I think Janine has, for the most part, accurately reflected some of the service changes that we proposed. We tried to be responsive to the retaining hourly service downtown, and maybe we misunderstood. We thought the hourly service was for the Cookie Crock and that area, what needed the high priority for hourly, and that's what stayed. But we did, modify that so there's no Los Osos loop, so there's more time in Morro Bay. So I suppose what we would recommend that you do is ask staff to sit down with us and continue to fine-tune these adjustments. I mean, I think there still is some room here for a compromise that could move forward as an option. Either you do that, you ask your staff to fine-tune the options, or at a minimum, you at least identify a plan that'll achieve the required improvements to meet fare box recovery ratio. What's proposed here still is below the 10% fare box recovery ratio. So we're either looking at doubling fares, or we need to know what those items are in order for us to do our job. So I'm available for questions, and I may have to.
Well, sure. How about if we open it up to other folks that want to talk, and then if we build questions, we'll come back to you. Thank you.
I'd just like to introduce myself. I haven't been here before. I'm Amy Wyatt. I'm in marketing and schedule service planning for RTA. I wish I could say that we had one answer for this case. What we're looking at, and we're looking for working with you, is, as Pete said, we need to come up with some reasonable trade-offs. Part of the deficiencies that have been brought up in the service plan are less service for Morro Bay. There's no way that you can improve the fare box and reach through Los Osos to try and reach out to find new fare-paying customers without reducing some of the service in Morro Bay. I know it's difficult. The geographical territories is tough with the long reach, and so that we can't go back and forth as often. But we've appreciated working with staff and trying to come up with some alternatives. And as Pete said, it doesn't have to be that this is the final one by any means. But as we move forward and looking at opportunities working together to create efficiencies, there has to be some losses. And we try to do that. We balance that every day in trying to create faster regional service, working with the local city carriers to get better connections throughout town, speed up our routes. And sometimes it means a longer transfer for some people in the certain areas, but it's not an easy decision at all. So we don't come here lightly as far as making these decisions for less service in certain areas, but it's certainly been surveyed and looked at where most of the ridership is coming from. So thanks. We'll look forward to continuing the work.
Well, thanks a lot. Do we have any other comments? No? All right. So
I've got a few questions.
And then let's open it up to questions so we can talk to Janine and if you like.
Janine, I basically have two questions. I wasn't aware of it before. Is this fare box recovery of 10% a requirement to get the state funds? Or
talking about. And
So in accordance with what our auditor has perceived as in accordance with the Transportation Development Act with regard to the farebox ratio, it's the 21% for the transit fund and the city's in compliance. Now,
so
that
you feel comfortable with the fact that you are complying with the law as it relates to getting the
as the auditor has directed.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean that we wouldn't continue to look at the Morro Bay Transit Service to make it more efficient and effective. As is outlined in the staff report, we have been doing things over the past year to try to improve ridership. And then for next fiscal year, with the changes in the cost allocation, that's a reduction for the operating costs. We have our information display cases and our bus stop signage that has been delivered, and within the next few weeks to the next 3 weeks would be going out. So then visually there's more presence for people out on the street. So there are things that we have been trying to do to increase the fare revenue, get more people in the seats, and to decrease the operating costs. So we feel
we're... But as I hear it right now, you feel comfortable with where the fare box ratio is and getting... I guess my concern is I wouldn't want to cut off my nose to spite my face a little bit in, you know, trying to get better coverage if we're not meeting the requirements. The second question I had real quick is, Peter brought up the fact of getting together again, continuing this to a later date. Is there any time certain reason this has to go to council that precludes you from going back, so to speak, to the bargaining table and trying to work out a little better?
No, other than the council had directed to, over the next few months, and that at that point was back in September, to come back in October, and that got moved back because of timing issues with scheduling meetings. But there's no nothing date certain that we have to come back to council by a particular date.
No.
The council is expecting something to come back, but if there's a particular recommendation from the board, as was last time, to continue the discussions to try to further refine the proposal, that is certainly something the board can do.
And if you stay with the existing service right now, it still meshes well with RTA as far as people getting picked up at City Park. And
correct. That was a service change that occurred in the
in November.
It was late October, and so all of the RTA North Coast buses now pulls at City Park or reach City Park at the same time that the Morro Bay Transit services, so there can be transfers between both services.
Well, I'll find out tonight. I had to drop my wife off at a doctor's appointment slow, and she's riding the RTA tonight. So I'll be honest, I've never ridden the bus system here, so I speak from a little bit of ignorance, other than the trip we took back in November to see how the Morro Bay Transit mm-hmm. side of it work.
And just to add to that, once the change was made to where all the transit buses locally and regionally were pulsing at the same time, we did experience an increase in ridership, particularly in the last few runs of the day, and throughout the day. The last run of the day went from like 2 riders per hour, it went to 4, averaging 4 or 5 riders per hour. Mm-hmm. And that was back just within a couple of months of that occurring. So that was a positive change that has increased.
Thank you, Janine. I appreciate it.
Ron, you have a question?
You're saying that you're at 21% on the fare box. Is that what I'm hearing?
According to the auditor and his review of TDA law and what is allowable, what is not allowable, and how the calculation should be.
Okay, and Peter's sitting out there shaking his head, no. Is there any way that we can get the two of you together and review the audit and come to a better consensus that will satisfy both of you so that we're on target rather than way apart at this point?
Right. We can certainly have that discussion. The audits, the annual audits are required and required to be submitted to the Council of Governments at the end of December each year for the prior fiscal year, and that was submitted to the Council of Governments. But we can certainly sit down and talk about the differences in where they're what they're seeing and what our auditor is seeing.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a couple questions. Richard, did you have any? I'm sorry. I think one part of this, I live in North Morro Bay, and I know that our service with RTA, it's kind of changed a bit in the last year. And so I'm, on one hand, I'm very biased in terms of just seeing what my local community, what they need, and speaking with people who do ride RTA and then also ride Morro Bay Transit. So if I'm hearing you correctly, and fare box ratio is up, and we can agree or disagree on a later date, speaking.
Sure. Noah Smuckler, City Council, and it's mentioned briefly, I think, in the staff report, which I got a quick chance to look at, but what Council Member Borchardt and I have been working on with the Senior Citizens Organization and Meals on Wheels, as well as with our own staff and city manager, is looking at the concept of a volunteer community bus, such as that's operated in Cambria. Looking at Cambria as an option to help us model something that would fit here in Morro Bay and help replace the direct service that we lost when we lost our Dial-A-Ride programming a couple years back. So what's been exciting about that is we've found some breakthroughs. The Senior Citizens Organization is willing to be the host, the nonprofit organization that hosts the program. Meals on Wheels has experience with dispatching their drivers to collect food and deliver food to different people in the community. So it seems like a good partnership, and our staff has been working with those two organizations to develop an agreement. And then ultimately, we have just submitted a grant application to be able to purchase our first bus. And the concept would be we'd have a volunteer dispatcher, and we found that dispatcher, which is a really key person in this whole concept, because that's, you've got to depend on that dispatcher. It's probably the most time intensive position of any in the whole concept there. And what you would have is volunteer drivers able to drive the bus on their Class C license, a regular driver's license, because the bus would be under 9 seats. That's what we applied for with our grant. And ultimately, if we get that grant, or if not, we'll be doing some fundraising to help cover the rest of the costs of operations of that program. Cambria, I believe, is able to do it on about $40,000 a year. They do most of their fundraising through a mailing campaign and then with support from SlowCog and other partners to help with some light maintenance, storage, insurance, and so on. But we think we can develop something for Morro Bay that would be a little less intensive than Cambria. They have 2 buses rotating. They've been going for, I believe, almost 20 years with their program. We think, because of our commitment to volunteerism here in our community that we see across the board, that we could develop this and turn it into something that would be a real benefit to the Senior Citizens Organization, and ultimately they could offer it as an opportunity for other other organizations in the community as well. And the idea with this is not to replace the existing service or any future service. It's to help us fill a void that we lost when we lost the direct demand Dial-A-Ride programming. We have seniors that are disabled, not able to walk the blocks potentially to get to a fixed route pickup, that just need a little more service than what we're able to offer right now, and that's the concept with this. So as we get closer, we'll be putting a call out to volunteer drivers. Should be a really an enjoyable experience. You're definitely offering a service that's going to be valued. And we're looking, when we started talking about this concept a couple years back, it didn't seem like we had the partners at that point to get this done, and now it's looking very likely. So that's exciting, and hopefully as we go forward, we'll be able to make further announcements and actually start to recruit and train drivers. Did that answer your question?
No, I think so, because I guess where I'm leading up to is in terms of demand response and looking at RTA meeting the needs of people in the community. And if we go to even the service we have now, and if we did away with Morro Bay Transit, we would have a service like that. But then you'd have to wonder, it's always a balanced system, whether or not RTA would be able to meet everybody's need that would need that. And so I'm not seeing that right now. And in terms of, I hear RTA's ideas and then Morro Bay Transit. So, and I like the idea that we're trying to meet as many people's needs as we can, and also meet the needs of RTA, because I like how we changed our schedule and we're getting more people to ride the bus and ridership is up. So Mr. Rogers, would you like to say anything else?
I'd just like to add that we are very supportive of community bus projects. The county had a very popular senior van program that we participated with and helped along, and it does fill a need. And then, and I just wanted to say that, you know, my boss and my board is pushing this issue really hard, you know, on this transit efficiencies, and, you know, we're open to continue working with you and eke out the efficiencies where we can to make sure people still have the mobility. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Can I ask one thing real quick of you, Peter? Is the difference between your 4%, because I couldn't figure it out in the numbers that are in this addendum where I look at where it says the estimated fares, and I don't see where it comes in at 4 or even 10 or 21%. Is the basic difference the fact that Janine's counting
quality service in it, the performance audit and the triennial performance audit and the five-year service plans, which are TDA requirements, have always included the trolley services within them. So the way that, from my understanding, the way the auditor's looking at it is it's in the transit fund, it's all blended in as part of transit services, regardless of whether you said that your transit, your TDA dollars were all used with this one service or spread between your services. I think that may be where the difference is. And we asked the auditor to go back and look through the TDA regulations when this discussion was brought up, that if it all gets blended in one as one fare box ratio in the transit fund, is that something that is allowable under TDA law? And he came back as his response was yes. So that was his determination.
Oh, okay. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Okay. Rogers.
Okay. Since we don't have a finite deadline, I'd like to make a motion that we postpone making a final decision on this and give you another 2 months and come back at our next meeting and make a decision then, if that's acceptable.
I'll second the continuance.
All right, so all those in favor say aye.
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 Okay, and I vote nay, but the motion carries 3-1. And so what we'll do then, we would ask and in 2 months, Janine, bring back, I guess, I don't know what sort of numbers you could bring, or if, and then, yes, go
well,
ahead.
What I'd like to see is a clarification between your 21% fare box and your 4% so that you can come to a consensus on what is there so that we don't lose funds and that everybody seems to be happy.
Okay, so we'll come back in 2 months to talk about this again, and then I guess Janine, you'll bring us whatever information you can, and if Mr. Rogers come back then. Okay, and so we'll postpone that for a couple months. Moving on, we have new business. Citizen request for a new stop sign procedure. And so I do believe, Rob, this is you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Of late, we've received a few stop sign requests in the city of Morro Bay. When we get a stop sign request, we evaluate the intersection for whether it meets warrants or the criteria for installing a stop sign. There's several criteria that we use to evaluate it: the volume of traffic, the accident history, proximity to other traffic control devices, whether it's on an arterial or residential collector type street, perform that analysis, and make recommendations whether that intersection will meet the criteria or what is known as warrants, either install a stop sign if it does meet warrants or not if it doesn't. Very rarely do stop sign requests in the residential neighborhoods of Morro Bay meet warrants, and it leaves quite a few people unsatisfied with that request. I often get the question, how many people have to die to install a stop sign? Well, there probably is a number. I don't know if you have to die, but there needs to be 5 accidents within a year's time to meet the accident warrant. We just don't have the traffic volume most of the time on most of the streets in Morro Bay to justify the installation of stop signs. A few cities in this area have a petition process to request a stop sign, and I'm most familiar with City of San Luis Obispo that has a petition process where you would go out to your neighborhood and petition your neighbors within 300 feet of that intersection. If you get a majority that want a stop sign, we'll take that to council. If council agrees, by resolution passes that request, a stop sign will be installed, but the neighborhood would be responsible for the costs of that installation. The city would do the maintenance on the stop sign over time. If it doesn't pass, or if it's on a non-residential street, an arterial collector, and it doesn't meet warrants, kind of stop, and we don't go any further with that stop sign. So
you can basically reroute traffic. There's two things I see with stop signs, and they're often missed, and it kind of bothers me a little bit because we're such an environmentally conscious city, is the fact that the reason city EPA mileage is always lower than highways, the starts and stops. And you can't realize the amount of gas used every time somebody has to stop, regardless if there's 20 cars at an intersection or none. And 80% of the time, there's none. And I see it kind of going against what that whole thought process is. The City of San Luis Obispo, I find interesting they do this because they actually preclude the use of drive-through restaurants in their town for the very reason they don't want the stop and start traffic and the smog associated with that, idling cars as you're waiting at an or waiting through the line. I just have real concerns with it, and I can't feel that I could support this. There's a reason why warrants were created for this very reason. I realize from a standpoint that doesn't make the citizenry happy. I do believe it does have to be watched carefully, especially on accidents, and I think that's the main reason for stop signs is safety. I mean, that's the whole purpose of it. It's not to calm traffic. It's not to divert traffic onto the next street, which does not have stop signs. And I'm going to give you a good example. You drive down Pacific from Piney Way to Main Street. There's not one stop sign. Which street does everybody use? Pacific. And it's just the fact that when stop signs go in, people reroute the way they go home, and it changes the whole traffic pattern of the city. And I'll get off my soapbox now. Thank you.
I have a question. Last night there was a major accident at Quintana and South Bay. And quite a while back I brought up a deal about we need some type of protection there. One of the problems you have is coming from Highway 1 going south. If you want to make a left turn onto Quintana to go into the parks that are over there, you're going to be in a big problem because there's no way to get past that car. If you're coming north on South Bay, if you make a left turn, the only way a person can pass you is to go onto the, I can't think of the term.
The shoulder.
The shoulder. But there's nothing marked there. And so the accident last night happened when somebody was trying to make a left turn from the southbound lane of South Bay. And the person that came behind them had just left Highway 1 and I guess was used to the highway speed and came down there and did not stop. There was no squealing of brakes. The person that was in the car that got hit evidently got away all right. The other one got injured, and they had to bring out people to take the person out of the car. So it's been a concern of mine for quite a while that something needs to be done in order to get out onto South Bay. If you're coming from the west on Quintana, you have to almost pull out into the intersection to be able to see north. you can see south, and but if you're coming from Quintana across, sometimes you have traffic coming at you from every angle. I know there's a sign there that says the intersection is 30 miles per hour. I think you can count on no fingers the number of people that go through that intersection at that speed. There's just beyond that sign, when you go to south of Quintana, there's a sign that says 40 miles per hour. And as you go on down, the signs change. So when you get down to Trailhead, I think it's 50 miles an hour or 55 from there on. Coming north on South Bay, it's 55 up until you get to that point. And the only stop that you have are a couple of stoplights. One, I think, is on Santa Isabella, and I don't know where the other one is. I don't remember the name. It's by a junior high. But my concern is, last night, I think the person told me that it happened at 6:25. I happened to be on the phone at that point, and my place looks down on that intersection, and there were red lights going everywhere up and down there. And they were going that way for quite a while. Then I read the review from the Sioux, like the Indians, and her concern about Main Street. So I went down Main Street to see, and that's almost like a raceway. There's nothing to stop or slow people down on that. And there's, in this material I got through the internet, I don't know who sent it to me, but anyway, I got it. There's a series of letters talking about things that this person has been trying to do to get a stop sign or get some way of controlling the traffic on that street. And they mentioned Morro Bay Boulevard, which has a stop sign on almost every corner from the roundabout all the way down to, I think it's Main Street or something like that. So my concern has been all along, I think Quintana and South Bay has a very dangerous intersection, and we need to do something about having it so people can make a safe left turn.
That intersection has been studied quite a bit over the past few years, and it does not meet warrants for a stop sign there. Right-of-way is limited for the installation of a left-turn pocket. There's not enough width to and maintain. There's also we just spoke about transit. There's a transit turn out there. Perhaps if we got rid of the bus stop, we'd have enough width there.
You'd have enough width coming north, but not going south.
Right. Most of the time, accidents are caused by driver inattention, and stop signs don't prevent driver inattention. We've had a few traffic accidents at that intersection due to driving under the influence. Traffic control devices rarely affect driving under the influence. You'll notice that there's the speed limit sign at the intersection is a yellow sign.
Yes, I saw
that. It is an advisory sign. It is not a regulatory sign. So it's a suggested speed limit through that intersection. The way we determine speed limits is by surveying the flow of traffic, because people will drive the speed that they feel comfortable driving in most situations. And we base that speed limit on what the 85th percentile of that speed, what most people will drive that road at, and that's how those speed limits are set. There's a section of Main Street, North Main, that is 40 miles, maybe 45 miles an hour. I think it's 40 miles an hour. I don't like that speed limit there. I think it's way too fast for a but I have very little authority to reduce that speed limit beyond what we survey. It becomes an unenforceable speed limit if it is set below what the studies allow. The city attorney also has concerns over the stop sign policy, and before it goes to council, he would be doing some more research on it, that if we put an unwarranted traffic control device there, is it enforceable? If somebody doesn't stop at an unwarranted stop sign, most of the time people just pay their ticket and go on. But if you go to court over it and ask for the warrant analysis of why that stop sign was put in there, a judge can decide that it's not warranted. The state sets standards for what traffic control devices are allowed. we have very little authority to create what we want or what we think would work there. I'll get off of my soapbox.
I'd like
now.
To add that that's very true. If somebody runs that stop sign, his lawyer is going to first find out, was that stop sign warranted? And, you know, these are those laws of unintended consequences you sometimes get with these kind of actions. That's why it concerned me. I noticed your last caveat was a resolution from the city council, so you did kind of cover your base, but I do concern myself just from the purely engineering traffic engineering standpoint.
I do need to point out that currently under our new existing municipal code, a citizen could use their 3 minutes at public comment and request the city council install a stop sign, and our code would allow that to happen. What this is an attempt to do is to formalize a process to make that request to city council.
Okay. Ron, did you have any comments? Or Richard, did you want to add?
Yes, I do. A while back, there was supposed to be a subdivision put up on Quintana, and I forget how many homes were supposed to be put in there. But one of the conditions of them getting the permit was that they would put in an electronic sign down on the corner of Quintana and North South Bay. And so I'm wondering, why is it important for that one, and it's not important now?
They were conditioned to do some improvements to that intersection. One of them could have been that electronic flashing sign. That subdivision was appealed to Coastal Commission. Coastal Commission overturned the appeal and upheld the subdivision. Subsequent to that, the appellants sued the Coastal Commission, went to court. The judge ruled in favor of the appellants that, not having anything to do with traffic, but due to the way they mapped and designated the environmentally sensitive habitat area, they said that the developer needed to basically start all over again, and that developer is now reevaluating that. Every time that I've checked it up until now, there hasn't been five in that year's time. And I don't know if some accidents don't get reported. We get a lot of questions on, there was almost an accident there. Well, near misses don't get reported. Rarely does somebody want to admit that they were in the wrong.
These weren't unreported ones. These were ones that supposedly reported because there was a police report.
If there's a police involved, they're definitely reported accidents. Mm-hmm. We have access to the electronic database that the police reports those to. It takes about 5 minutes to make the request, and then we get the results in about 20 minutes that come back from the state. So it's fairly easy to verify the accident history at intersections. So,
I think we're going off on.
We're
what you're saying, Richard, because it's a very important point, and I totally agree with you because I was right there after that accident last night, and I saw that. However, talking about stop signs, so Rob, as I read this, not to preclude anybody making a comment, if our city attorney is going over this, it doesn't matter what we say right now if he's going to go over it. So should we table this and see what he says and then bring it back at the next one to see what the city attorney says?
You could do that or make your recommendations. We would file those with the city attorney's recommendations and move it forward to city council.
Okay. So we have two choices here.
I move that we table it.
I second it.
Table it or deny it, in my mind.
Okay, so we have a second for...
Based on it's presently worded, I would deny it. If the intent is the lawyer to clean it up, I mean the city attorney to clean it up and make it something more enforceable or make more sense, then I think the continuance may be in order.
And likewise, I like the way you put in the city engineer will have one of the final says in there, so it's not willy-nilly like you're saying, right, with just some adverse petition coming. So we have a motion, and go ahead, Ron.
Okay. When you table it, you really are killing it. Parliamentary procedure is when you table something, it makes it harder to bring back. I would say postpone, make a motion
or
to postpone.
Continue it. Yeah.
Or continue it. Okay. Rather than tabling.
I'd be glad to change it.
Okay. All right.
So we have a motion to postpone, continue it until the April PWAB after the, Mr. Schultz would have a chance of looking at it, and we can go at it from there. Then we have a second, and all those in favor?
Aye.
Motion
Aye.
Carries. Okay. We have one more remaining item is concerns Morro Bay Beach Access Improvement. I forget. It was discussed back in October. All right. Now, Noah, did you want to speak about this at all? No?
I think Rob.
Okay, no, the only reason, I know you had brought it up and talked about it, but Rob, would you like to speak about it?
Sure, I'll give a brief staff report. This is kind of a deja vu for me because I prepared a staff report to go to City Council. It's gone to Rec and Parks, to Harbor Advisory Board, now back to PWAB. I think all of us have been copying from each other's staff report, and when I went to read the one that went to Harbor, it was very familiar to me for some reason. But this has came up from, you know, community through City Council in developing a better way to access the beach from the Rock parking lot. And we've talked a lot about stairs or ramp, whether ADA is required or not. In my opinion, we need to and I've attached the access board, federal access board requirements for beach access routes. Based on my reading of that, we have to make all accommodations as much as possible for able-bodied and disabled access to the beach. Looking at whether you'd construct a stairway or a ramp, I think the costs in order of magnitude are fairly similar because the elevation change is not that great.
It's about four to five feet
yeah. of elevation change. So we're not talking a huge structure there. And the goal is to get people maybe a little bit closer to the hard sand, the sand that gets wet, which is easier to walk on. So I did a real preliminary cost estimate, kind of a order of magnitude cost estimate. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of about $80,000. It kind of, as the sand migrates, you still have access down there. We have pictures of a wooden ramp. We have the Avila improvements, which are kind of a ramp blended into a stairway. That looks like it might be a little over the top for the Rock area. We have another one from Santa Cruz, which is a stairway right down to basically the water there. My understanding with that, they're able to, that's a stairway that they've been, it's been there for a long time, and somebody can help me where it's steamer? Pleasure Point. Mm-hmm. It's been there for quite a while, and they're able to maintain that stairway. So I think there's one on the second page at La Jolla Cove, an older stairway system. And kind of the stacked revetment rock that looks like a stair also there. So those are kind of some examples of what types of projects. I think, you know, blending it in with what we have there, in my view, would be the best to do. Keeping the cost to a minimum, I think Harbor Advisory Board was, you know, the recommendation was the less obtrusive the better, the smaller the better, the less costly the better, were those recommendations. So what we're looking for, any comments from Public Works Advisory Board and a recommendation to forward this back to council as a project.
Can I go ahead?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Anybody
else like to make a comment? Are you going to make a motion? No, I wanted to ask a few questions.
Go ahead, I'm
sorry. Because I deal with ADA a lot in my regular business, and I agree with you. If you're going to provide a stairwell, you're going to have a ramp. You can't get away with a ramp without the stairwell, so I followed that logic very well. The two concerns I had with the ramp, and I'll be honest, Rob, I don't know the answer, is when you take a ramp down to a place where there's no handicap access when you get down to the bottom of the ramp, even especially when you talk about the sand blowing on, how do they have the ability to turn around? You'd almost have to create a turnaround point so that they could get back on the ramp and come back up, especially if they're in a wheelchair. The second thing is I would assume you'd have to provide paved parking at the entrance to this ramp that meets all the handicap criteria in order to get onto the ramp itself. So it does grow a little bit. In essence of what, I think it's a noble cause. I've been down there, and it's not a whole lot of fun climbing down those rocks sometime to get down to the beach, or you can walk, you know, way the heck around to the north and come back down to it. I think it is a noble attempt. I just would like to make sure, whoever, you know, that it covers all the ADA requirements, because those are the two concerns I would have, especially with the sand coming up the ramp itself. If you have a four-foot-wide ramp, that's not enough turnaround space, and it doesn't give you that landing area that they have to have to make the turnaround. So I noticed that one, I think your picture back here on the last page on the lower left shows an area it looks like where they kept it a big turnaround area. There's somebody actually down there in a wheelchair that can make the turnaround, come back up. And the only other concern I'd have is, if the ramps get too long, it might become a skater's paradise. But you do have the skate park nearby, so that's probably not as big an issue.
If I could jump in here, I think the last time we were talking about this, the existing sand ramp that Harbor Patrol uses, lifeguards use, does that count under ADA as a ramp for people to access the beach because they can use beach wheelchairs?
No, that would not. That would not count. The access board guidelines are really to get somebody down to, even if they couldn't traverse the beach, so that they could get that experience of getting down there to the, now to traverse the beach, of course, they would have to have a beach wheelchair, which we do have available at our harbor office that you can check out or borrow those beach wheelchairs there. And I have seen those used on the beach. And I was unaware of those. They're a great, great thing. So, no, the sand ramp does not count. It does not meet the guidelines that the Federal Access Board publishes.
So I guess this is I don't know if this is bird walking. We have that beach chair there now. It can be requested at will, and the only ramp they can use is the sand ramp now. So you're not in compliance?
We're not making an improvement there.
Yeah, that's the
Once we make an improvement there, then we need to...
People in a wheelchair getting down to the hard-packed sand, I can just admit that on a low tide, they could go all the way down to the creek. It'd be very nice and convenient. And if you can make that mold into the existing ecosystem there, I think that would be great. And I'm sure it could be engineered given the wave action there. But I know, having surfed there for years and years, getting over those rocks, yeah, I mean, that's one thing if you do it all the time. But if you're not used to it, and if you fall, it can definitely...
it hurts.
And it's a long fall when you fall, too. So I would definitely be, myself, would really be interested in something like that. So I don't think... anybody have anything else to say?
Oh. No, I'd make a motion that we move forward with this subject to... getting grant money to construct it, and that's my motion.
All right.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, the motion carries. And hopefully we'll go over another round of all the various committees, Rob, before...
Yeah.
And then we'll somehow find the money.
Yeah, and don't take what I was saying as dissent against it. I think it's a great idea. I just didn't want to find yourself in a situation where you build something and then you get... beat around the head and face because it doesn't meet ADA requirements.
No, those were very good comments, yeah. And we'll add those to the project.
Yeah.
The engineering on it would be something, because if you do have to do that on the bottom, if they did go with that ramp, because that gets severe.
Well, I think you're almost going to have a turnaround down there somewhere, and then you kind of bring the sand up to it. And you've got to maintain that a little bit.
And totally in the wave action that place gets, that's going to be.
Is it going to be down under the high water line?
It could. We haven't picked the final location, but the goal was to get it onto the hard sand.
Oh, okay.
And the hard sand is hard because water is on it, and especially during storms and high tides. I didn't realize till I went out there one time how far it comes up in the wintertime.
Well, the other thing, you could do the turnaround down there and then angle off of that, sloping down, let the sand come up to it, so you always got something going down to it. So.
And Lord forbid if we ever got enough money to put a couple stairs there, because it, I don't know, just tide pooling there is fun too.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's, we'll see what comes back with that. Next item on there is future agenda items. Does anybody on the board have a suggestion for a future agenda item? And Rob, do you have any idea of what's coming up?
Oh, I don't know if I like this, our new agenda format where we don't have our placeholder list for
getting used to.
Yeah, for future agenda items. I know we have some water issues that will be coming back, water conservation, and our collection system report that will be coming back to you. We've had some transitions in the collection system, so we're still growing into those. So with the retirement of one of our key members, so I think utilities issues will be coming back to you. And then the two items that we talked about tonight will be also coming back.
Continued to.
I'm sorry, is there any way that we can get that future list? I know they're trying to go with one streamlined version for all the committees that we could. We used to have that list of future agenda items.
Maybe we make it a brief report as part of the consent, one of the consent items, or we just have it be an attachment to the agenda so that it future agenda items would have that carry along list.
Yeah. And also, so everybody knows, I think we're all aware that if you come up with ideas, you think of something that is appropriate for this board, please bring it to the board. That's one thing about it. On the Public Works Advisory Board, we can bring up items. And also, this goes to Morro Bay in general. Anybody listening or watching this, if you have items that you're concerned about in Morro Bay, please come to the Public Works Advisory Board, and we can listen and give voice to your concerns. And with that, the meeting is adjourned. Our next meeting for PWAB is April 19th at 6 p.m. So thanks a lot, and we'll see you in 2 months.
Thank you.